You're listening to Stateside. I'm Cynthia Canty. It has been nearly 4 years since Hamilton opened off-Broadway. Lin-Manuel Miranda's take on the life of the $10 founding father without a father exploded, and the hip-hop sung-through musical about Alexander Hamilton soon moved to Broadway. In September 2016, it opened in Chicago, where it has packed the house 8 shows a week ever since. Well, one of the founding members of that Chicago cast is with us today. Jonathan Kirkland grew up in Southfield, went on to Michigan State University, where he studied voice, emphasizing opera and classical music. He earned a Bachelor of Musical Performance degree. Last September, he retired from the Chicago company of Hamilton after 2 years of playing George Washington. It's a pleasure to welcome Jonathan Kirkland to Stateside.
It's my pleasure to be here. Thank you for having me.
Both times I saw the show, you were Washington, and man, there's a lot of talent on that stage.
Yeah, it's amazing.
You were magnificent.
Thank you.
How many shows did you keep a number in your head? Hundreds.
Yeah, I think I'm right under 500, I want to say. I can't remember exactly where I was. I think the company by the time I left was at like 550 or 600 or something like that. But I think for me, I think I was at like 497 or 493, something like that. A ton of shows.
That is a lot of Here Come the General.
Yeah.
I want to start from the beginning. How old were you when you realized you could sing?
Okay. So the story is, it's a debate within my family. For me, I feel as though I knew I could sing as young as 7 or 8, like a really, really little kid. And I would tell my family for years, but they didn't believe me because I was so shy and I would never sing anything. But to me, I'm like, man, I really think I can sing. I think I can do it. I think I'm good. So then fast forward to I get the church solo, and I had to be 16, I want to say, 16, mm-hmm. like 15 or 16.
High school,
whatever it is. I get a church solo in the church choir and, like, knock it out the park. And they're like, oh, my God, he can actually really sing. So we have to pursue this. So, you know, one thing leads to another. I start training. My mother, of course, is an opera singer. So she becomes my first voice coach and teacher. So we start working together, and we leverage that to, you know, college and so forth and so on.
And yeah. We need to do a shout out to your mother because she taught voice at Eastern?
Eastern Michigan, yeah.
How long?
She retired as, I want to say, the head of the voice department, mm-hmm. I believe. I don't even know how long. It has to be. Well, I won't say my age, but she was there for as long as I've been alive. So we'll definitely say at least like 30 plus years. We'll go with that.
Now, I've read about you. Am I right? Is it correct that you kind of had a tug of war going between athletics and music, and instead of developing that voice that landed you that part in Hamilton, you could have wound up playing basketball for Michigan State?
Yes and no. That's a story that I think has been embellished through the years, and maybe some of that is my fault. but the truth is this. I've you know, my father was a basketball coach, and my brothers and I have always been either athletics or something in the artistic realm, you know, or education. That's kind of where our family ties, mm-hmm. I guess, kind of go. And for me, the feeling was, you know, if I really pursue playing ball, I think I have a shot to maybe do some things. So fast forward to Michigan State, and I get to college, and I go to the walk-on tryout, you know, and it was good. I thought I played really well. But then I had the privilege of seeing Shannon Brown, Maurice Eger, Drew Neitzel, and all these guys up close and personal. I said, well, the truth is I'm not that, and I'm never going to be that. That's what NBA looks like. I'm not that guy.
Okay.
So I better stick with this singing thing and ride that out and see where that goes. So I don't think the tug of war was as strong as it's made to have been seen over the years.
Okay.
Now, internally it was until I saw what the truth really was.
And you
I
got said, real.
It got real. And I said, I mean, these guys were jumping out of the gym. You know what I mean? I'm like, this is crazy. Like, I'll never be that. As good as I thought I was, a good shooter and fundamentally and all that, the truth is, for my skill set, I would have had to be 5 inches taller. You know what I mean? And much more athletic. So we let that go pretty quick.
So there you are at Michigan State. And anyone who is thinking of a career in the performing arts, whether it's musician or singer or actor or artist, is urged to have that plan B in mind. What was your plan B?
So I was actually considering broadcast journalism. As a kid, man, I was so enamored with George Blaha. Like,
he was my
guy. Like, George was like, I would listen to, you know, the Pistons and whomever else, really the Pistons, because I was a basketball fan. And, you know, all his little quips I kept in mind, you know, count that baby with a foul and like all these little things. So I was so enamored by it. And I was lucky enough to meet, I want to say, I can't remember his name, but I had to be like 10 years old, 11 years old, maybe Hewell Perkins or maybe one of the big, you know, mid-Michigan
TV anchors. Sure.
And we went to the studio and I was just so enamored by the cameras and the lights and all that. And I was like, man, I want to try this. You know what I mean? So for me, it's always been something in the realm of entertainment where I feel like I've belonged.
That you're on stage in some way.
But in some way, shape, mm-hmm. or form, entertaining others, you know, taking people from whatever they're dealing with in their life to try to pull them out of that, even if it's just for a second, to just get a break. You know what I mean? Life throws all kind of curveballs. Life can be indifferent to us. And for me, as the years went on, it turned into, well, if I don't act or if I don't sing or if I'm not on stage, what else can I do that allows me to entertain and kind of pull people out of whatever mess or drama they may deal with? You know what I mean?
Yes.
So that was always my plan B. And then a plan C or BA,
BA,
if
B1,
you will,
B2.
was always in the education realm. Like I mentioned earlier, my family,
parents.
Everything is huge in education. I taught actually before I went full time as an actor, which I probably wouldn't go back to because I was teaching kindergarten and first grade, and I love the babies. But never again. It was just, no one told me that I'd be raising kids.
Herding
like,
cats.
I didn't, no one told me. It was like the first day, I'm like, okay, let's line up. And the little girl says, well, what's a line? I said, well, you can't be here. You have to go back home. If you don't know what a line is, you know. So that's where I started. So for me, it's always been something in entertainment or education. Those are the lanes where I feel like I fit best.
If you've just joined us, we're speaking with Jonathan Kirkland, the MSU grad who has spent 2 years as George Washington in the Chicago Company of Hamilton. You know, Jonathan, there are schools that, you know, they really grab that lion's share of attention as top places for studying and training in the performing arts. NYU, mm-hmm. University of North Carolina School of the Arts, Wesleyan, mm-hmm. where Lin-Manuel went, mm-hmm. Juilliard, U of M.
Yep.
You chose Michigan State. Why?
Yes. It felt like home. For me, as a kid who didn't know much about, I was very honest about, I don't know if I'm going to stick with this, you know, opera, while I saw my mother and her career and how successful she was. The truth is, how to best put this? Opera wasn't popular. You know what I mean? Classic music wasn't the most popular vein to go into. So for me, I didn't know if it'd be something I'd fall in love with, if it'd be something I wanted to stick with. But I knew I was talented and I knew I was gifted. And vocally, it's still to this day my best vocal quality, if you will. So the conversation was always, well, where will I end up? That'll be a place where I feel like I'm nurtured and where I feel like they'll care about me, not just what I can do for them, if that makes sense. And at MSU, that conversation was always very clear. Professor Fracker, who was my voice coach, said day one at my audition, like I sang for everyone and they, you know, they like my stuff. And then he and I worked together for a little while in his studio. And he said, Jonathan, listen, you know, if you choose to stick with this or not, it's up to you. We just want to help you achieve your dreams and get to where you want to go. And if it's opera, great. We'd love that. If not, then we'll help you figure something else out, you know? And at that moment, it was really clear, like, this is where I feel as though I need to be. And just the fabric at MSU is such a family culture. It's a nurturing culture that I think I needed at that age, being not as I wasn't not gung-ho, but not as sold on whether or not this is what I'll do. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Still searching a little.
Still searching, you know what I mean? And at that time, I wasn't sure, but MSU assured me that we're here for you, not just what you can do for us.
And what did the training that you got at MSU, how did that prepare you for that day in, day out challenge of being a professional actor and singer?
So I take that deep breath because it was rigorous, man. I mean, rehearsals all the time, which is a good problem to have. Like, that means you're actually performing and you're actually doing work. But rehearsals all the time, a lot of sacrifice, you know. Funny story, as much as I love basketball, last night when my family and I went to watch Michigan State play Northwestern, that was the first basketball game I saw at the Breslin Center. And I was on campus for 5 years, right?
Wow.
So the thing was, is during basketball season, that's opera season. So we're in rehearsals and we're doing shows and we have things to prepare. So I couldn't be a part of that as much as I wanted to, or all the parties you want to enjoy in college or whatever. Well, I got to rest my voice because I got to sing the next day, you know? So a lot of that, it taught the sacrifice of what it takes to be an artist, you know? Many people say to be an artist is a blue-collar job, and in many ways I agree with that. If nothing else, it's very hard work and it's very rigorous work, and MSU taught us how rigorous it is from a class schedule perspective, a rehearsal perspective, and then actually having to perform, you know?
So you took that skill set, and even though you'd been doing opera, you made this jump over to musical theater. How did that happen?
So I went to the University of Houston for grad school, and my opera director was Buck Ross, and great, great director, awesome guy. And when I got there, we both kind of, we would have these unspoken conversations about where we assumed I would end up. And he would just kind of say, like, Jonathan, just don't be surprised if you make a switch. You know what I mean? Like, if time goes on, I just see you moving to New York and you might make a switch. I was like, all right, well, we'll see. And the first musical theater production I did was in Houston at a theater called the Ensemble Theater, a community theater down there. And they did a Cinderella, and it wasn't Rodgers and Hammerstein. It was an original take on Cinderella adapted by the African-American Shakespeare Festival with this original like R&B and soul music and all this stuff. And it blew my mind. And I got to play Prince Charming. And I was like, it took me to a different level that I didn't know existed for me. It opened the door. Yeah. And after that show, you know, my wife and I think we were engaged at the time. And I just said, I think we got to move to New York. I think I got to go for it, man. I think this musical theater side is more artistically, I just think is something that I'm enamored by and I want to give it a shot, you know. And at the time, operatically, my voice was still growing and is still growing. And oftentimes for male singers, baritones, it takes some time to kind of to let your roots settle operatically. So I figured, well, if I move to New York, I can leverage my voice and earn work in the theater world, you know, and grow as an actor in this other realm that I really want to pursue while my voice settles operatically if I choose to go back that route.
So you were keeping options open. How long until you landed Hamilton?
We moved to New York in June of 2013, and I started rehearsal for Hamilton in August of 2016. So 3 years. Okay. 3 years. I taught for the first year in New York, went full-time in the summer of 2014, and 2 years later was, you know, playing George Washington. They were crazy enough to give me a shot. So.
And when I think of these years since Hamilton opened off Broadway, now we are familiar with seeing actors of color playing the founding fathers and mothers. Yeah. It was so novel when it first opened. What do you feel? You've been in that Hamilton bubble for those 2 years you played George Washington. What does it mean for young people in color in terms of opening eyes and ears first to musical theater and also to that even as a career?
I think it's huge. I think representation and being seen is so vital, you know, especially in a world where entertainment in large part runs America. You know what I mean? In many ways, like what we see, even if you look at social media, it's entertaining. That's why we go to it, looking at people's pictures, looking at their little videos or whatever. And on the tragic side, seeing how people of color can be treated, you know, be it police officers, be it school, be it whatever the case may be. But it's all something that we visualize that shifts and scopes how we view ourselves and how we view the world, right? So being seen and being represented is so huge. And I think for young kids, my goal has always been, whether you want to be an actor, whether you want to be whatever, my hope is that you'll see something in me that resonates with you to say, well, this guy followed a dream. And he actually did it. And I want to pursue the same. And I've always said, you know, the saying is art goes in line and in stream with culture. Right. I've always believed that art can shift and dictate culture. I believe that. I believe what we see shapes how we feel and what we believe. And seeing actors of color play founding fathers hopefully will lead the country in a way or take a step forward in leading the country in a way to get us to be a little more colorblind, which is what we actually say we want to be on paper. So hopefully it brings America closer to what we say we actually strive to be. You know what I mean?
Yeah. As you played George Washington, what did that mean for you personally to be standing there being the father of our country?
It was interesting. It was an honor, but it was also this intriguing duality of an internal debate, right? Like, I'm playing a guy that owned slaves, and I'm playing a guy who was courageous enough to fight a war he knew he couldn't win, but found a way to win, to be the president of the nation when he wanted to retire, all these different things that Washington did, but didn't have the courage to fight to free slavery when he knew it was wrong. And he's written in you, and you know, upon his death, he freed a slave. So to have so much courage to do these things in real life, but then this cowardice when it came to the lives of other humans who actually built the nation. You know what
yes,
I mean?
Yes.
So it was an honor, but at the same time, in moments, there was this really, I don't want to go as far as to say struggle, but at times an internal debate of, you know, is this the right role? Is this something, should I do this? But then what always brought me back really quickly to I need to do this and I should is because if there were any way to come full circle to where America should be, it would be a man of color playing a slave owner, but playing it my way, doing it with my interpretation as a black actor, with my urban colloquialism swag, you
yes.
know what I mean?
Yes.
Doing it my way with my flavor, with my acting chops, and telling your story the way I decide to tell it, you know what mm-hmm. I mean? And I would hope that's something that, you know, if he's in his grave, hopefully he wouldn't be rolling around, but would be proud, I would hope. And if not, I'm fine with that too. You know what I mean?
What lines resonated most with you as you would sing them?
A lot of them, man. So with the show, it's taken different tones based on what's happened in our nation. You know what I mean? The show we did before the election, the night before the election, was completely different than the show we did the day after the election, right? So certain words that had meaning day one had a little less, and then other words had a little more meaning day two. For example, right-hand man is, you know, this powerful, we're at war, it's an explosive scene. And the words in right-hand man never really initially, it was just always dope. It was like, man, Lin can write. This is a dope rap.
Yeah.
But being the thought of being outgunned, outmanned, outnumbered, outplanned, for certain people in this country, you know, when our president was elected, that's how we began to feel a little bit. You know what I mean? So day one, what was just a really cool rap kind of turned into, this is how I feel. You know what I mean? Like to hear some of our cast tell stories of after the election, we're just walking to work and people driving in a car calling them certain racial slurs as we just walk down the street going to work. You know what I mean? So things like that kind of shift the tone, you know? So to not be on such a tragic side,
no,
though,
right.
other words that yeah. consistently had a more positive meaning was Washington's I want to sit under my own vine and fig tree. That because as John Kirkland, mm-hmm. I'm so focused on legacy and everything I do is in trying to leave an inheritance for my children's children and making sure my family is taken care of and all those kind of old school values.
Safe in this country we've made.
You
yeah.
know what I mean? You
yeah.
want to be safe in this nation that we've made mm-hmm. and wanting to do everything I can to build that. So that part of the song musically is already so emotional, but you throw in who you are as a person. If you throw yourself into the work as an actor, then it can be, it was always really tough to kind of get through that one, you know what I mean? And really, as I'm thinking, all of Washington stuff, history having its eyes on you is such a big deal, you know what I mean? So much of what my character in the show said and sung resonates, and it hit me in a spot because in many ways, Washington, take away the slavery part, in many ways, as I studied him, he and I have very similar traits. He was a family man. He was a sensitive man. But when it came time for battle, he was ready to go. You know what I mean? So in many ways, we kind of lined up, you know? So in a lot of his words, it wasn't hard for me to, if you will, find the character because this dude in many ways is, I feel like, is me, you know?
Yeah, yeah. If you're just joining us, we're speaking with Jonathan Kirkland, the Southfield native and MSU grad who spent 2 years as George Washington in the Chicago company of Hamilton. And Jonathan, I'm really interested in that view from inside the Hamilton bubble as a cast member. What struck you most about the way that audiences would respond to what you were doing on that stage?
The thing that was crazy was there would be 8-year-old African-American boys and 80-year-old Jewish women who were enamored with this show, and it would blow my mind. Like, we would go out and, you know, speak to the audience and maybe sign autographs, and I would see these little kids of color, and they would say, man, that was dope, man, that was great, that was amazing. And then these old, sweet little Jewish women say, this is the best thing I've ever seen in my life. So I'm like, how did Lin write a show that's palatable for everyone in a nation that can't really agree on much, but somehow has found a way to agree that, well, this show we all like for the most part.
Why do you think that is?
I think it's the fusion of hip hop, you know, with the hip hop undertone, and then this musical theater, the fact that it's a musical theater show with a hip hop undertone, but with amazing songs and amazing music. We as Americans, if we don't appreciate anything else, we like good music, right?
We do.
So I think the fact that he wrote music and it's American history. That's the biggest bit.
In all its messiness,
yes. it's a view, it's a look on American history through the scope. Really, to me, of Aaron Burr, but that's a whole different conversation. Mm-hmm. But it's the view of American history through this guy's lens, and it gives you some of the mess, some of the glory, some of the confusion, some of the miraculous how in God's name did this happen. You know what I mean? So I think the fact that it's history really has people enamored because anyone who's an adult comes back and says, I had no idea I don't remember any of that. And I got an A in history.
Because it wasn't on those
and
pages.
I don't remember any of that. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I think that's what has people enamored. But what was also really cool was, you know, we could see the first few rows of the audience, right? So it was also really, really cool to, you know, see one of my colleagues just killing a scene. And if I look in the audience really quick, just watching how engaged I would say 9 out of 10 people really were. Now, we have a saying, our director, Tommy Kale, always had a saying that said, look, every show you're going to change a life, and every show someone's going to take a nap. That just is what it is. You know what I mean? It can be the best show in the world, and someone's going to take a nap, but someone's life will be changed in every way. Someone will turn 180 once they walk out of that theater and do something they never thought they could do, or at least try it, you know?
Or have an insight.
Or have an insight.
Not have,
have an insight they didn't have. Yeah, so seeing everyone be so engaged and enamored with the show was really cool.
What are the personal challenges of 8 shows a week?
Oh, my God. for me, the challenges were, so from a voice perspective, I'm I guess what the opera world would call a lyric baritone, what the theater world would call a baritenor, right? Long story short, I'm at the top of my range with Hamilton, right? Like, I'm up about as high as I go, you know? So for me, it was a lot of vocal rest. It was a lot of learning how to take care of your body, learning how to take care of your instrument. Then my wife and I were blessed enough to have our daughter, so entering the new challenge of being a father. So it's like, man, how do you balance all these different things while actually showing up to perform this show with the energy and the gravitas that I try to bring to it night in and night out. So it's very athletic. You know, being an actor in any realm, I think, is very athletic, but especially musical theater, because you're pouring out so much and you're giving out so much. So the biggest challenge, I think, was just the adjustment. You know, I had done shows where I had done 6 shows a week, you know, maybe 7 shows a week, but I wasn't playing George Washington. You know, even if I was playing a lead, it wasn't George Washington. So
with all the gravitas that demands.
Right.
Magnificent
so the challenge,
role.
Yeah, it's amazing. So the challenge was learning how to balance that, learning how to take care of your voice, because the truth is the next audience deserves the same performance, if not better, than the audience before. If you can't give 100% of what you have, you shouldn't be out there that night. And it was also learning how to do that. You know, if all I have is 80%, I got to give 100 of that 80, and the audience can never know the difference. And I assume they did. I hope they never did, you know.
I saw, in fact, it's on your Instagram page, a video of your final curtain call when you left the show this past September. You knelt down and kissed the stage.
I did.
What was going on in your mind and heart at that moment?
You know, to be personal, to be honest, I guess, I don't know any other way to be, so I don't know if that's a necessary disclaimer. But for me, Hamilton was in many ways answered prayers, right? Like, in a lot of ways, it was, you know, as an actor, you don't know if you can tackle certain roles until you tackle it. You can be as confident as you want to be, but until that challenge comes, you don't know if it's something that you can actually do. And for me, you know, booking the show and being a part of that company for 2 years was just, it was life-changing, and it was so many confirmations for my career, so many confirmations personally, you know. And it was so many challenges, but the greatest rewards, you know. So at that moment, it was just thinking back on day one at rehearsal and how excited I was, but how nervous I was, because now, I mean, there were people in that room that I have looked up to and admired for years, and now we're colleagues, and now we're going to lunch, and now we're talking art and acting and things like that.
I'm part
and
of this.
Right?
Let me in.
Like, they really did that. So, you know, Lin is in the corner on his computer typing away, probably writing Moana or whatever he's doing. I don't know. Whatever Lin does, right? And then, you know, I'm looking at Josh Henry, a guy that I've admired for so long, and Wallace Smith and Karen Olivo and these people that I'm like, man, I've looked up to y'all and y'all don't even know. And now I'm in a room with you guys. You know what I mean? So it was, and then it was going from that transition to then, as the cast shifted, you know, some of the younger cast members that came in and building those relationships and you know, my heart toward those guys and how I was going to miss everybody and how bittersweet it is. You know what I mean? And then at the end of the day, I think how proud of myself that I was. You know, we don't take enough time to be proud of ourselves when we achieve goals. You know, we can do it, and then we get so caught on the next thing, especially in our millennial generation. So I was proud that for 2 years I gave everything I had every night, point blank period. You know, and I, like I said, went through crazy challenges, but great rewards. And I was just proud of myself, and I was grateful to God that I was blessed enough to have the opportunity to be a part of one of the greatest shows in world history. You know what I mean? Like, everyone can't say that. So it was overwhelming that this really happened and I really did it, you know?
Yeah.
And also a Spartan, I guess, kissing the floor is a traditional thing that we do. But at the time, I wasn't even really thinking about that. But maybe that's that Spartan blood that runs in me, because I really wasn't even considering that. It was just something, it's just in the moment, you know what I mean? Because this floor was my home for 2 years, you know what I mean? And now it's time for me to leave and elevate and go on to the next thing.
So what is the next thing? What's next? What do you have your eye on?
Well, I can't share it yet, but we do have some irons in the fire and some really good things that I'm hoping to announce pretty soon, but we got to wait and see. I'm waiting to get some final words, and as soon as I get them, I'll let everyone know. So just be on the lookout, but I can't share it yet. Like contractual stuff.
Absolutely.
I can't say anything yet.
Yeah. But things are shaping up.
Things are working, man. Things are working. I can't complain.
Very good. Jonathan Kirkland, thank you so much for spending time with us on Stateside.
Thank you guys for having me. I appreciate it.